Hello, everybody, and welcome to Declarations of War. Your host for this evening, myself, Alexei Picard. We've got Kingblade with us.
Hey, hey.
And CSM representative Ali Ross.
Hey, folks.
And our very special guest, Thaddeus Drake.
Hey, guys.
Now, Thaddeus is from Unkindness Incorporated, currently member of VD down in the Tash Merkon area, and the reason we have him on is because we just came off a contract against this alliance, and it's a rare pleasure that we get to have, you know, the other side of the perspective of the mercenary contract on the same show that we talk about it. So I really want to thank Thaddeus for grasping the pony-hoofed branch of friendship and
is
going on to the show.
Alec?
Sure. So first off, shout-outs, thank-outs, I want to thank Thaddeus, who found himself on the wrong end of an NAR contract. Good job, buddy.
Thanks, man.
And I'm going to give a shout-out to CCP Grayscale, or I guess I should say former CCP Grayscale. We'll be talking about this more later on in the show, but he's gone, end of an era. But, you know, I enjoyed the discussions, I enjoyed the perspective he brought. So I guess last shout-out for me to him.
My shout-out is to all the EVE players in all of the major markets buying and selling my crap. Thanks to you, I've hit a new milestone in my production and sales. I have just topped 1 trillion ISK. In 1 trillion ISK in sales over my time producing things. So thank you all for buying my stuff and continue to buy my swag. I appreciate it.
That is quite the milestone indeed. Congratulations. Hey, Ninja Turtle's here.
What's up?
Hey, Turtle, you got any shout-outs?
Yeah, I want to give a big shout-out to the Brave FC that just warped, like, 80 Eagles onto our 30 Smart Bombing Rokes. It was a good call.
All right, Thaddeus, shout-outs?
I'd like to give a shout-out to everyone involved in the Sukkanen conflict down in Taj Merkon and all the crazy people throwing caps and super caps around Losec. Thank you, Phoebe.
Sukkanen. The True Blood references will never end. The official campaign on our end, it was the Sukkanen Slavernacher. And it really was, man. I can't wait to get to the contract wrap-up today, although we have tons to talk about, because obviously Thanksgiving happened. There were some health issues involved, first from me, then from other hosts, and we're finally all here, healthy, and it's no longer the holidays, so it's time to record shows. We have to get caught up on, like, everything that's happened, and it has been so much happening.
On the bright side, I didn't die, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, so King got hospitalized, like, the night we were going to record this. He's like, hey, Alec, I'm going to be in the ER, so probably not going to make the recording tonight. It's like, oh, okay. And then he, like, never responded to me for hours afterward. I didn't know if he died or what.
Painkillers are fun, man.
They are. They're the best.
Oh, they are, especially when you're hurting. They are fan-freaking-tastic.
All right, guys, before we get into everything, I want to remind you guys that this month we are really pushing the iTunes reviews. If you're listening to this show on iTunes, through iTunes, you have an iTunes account, even if you're not listening to the show through the said account, please go to iTunes, rate and review the show. It really helps us with our exposure, trying to grow the listener base a little bit, especially with all the new players that are coming in after everything that's been going on between the new patch, the This Is EVE trailer. I mean, there are just tons and tons of new players coming into the game, and I really want them to find this show. And so do you, because this will help them stay. So, rate and review the show.
Yes, please. 5 stars, 4 stars, 5 stars.
Let's shoot for the 5 stars. You guys can take it to the next level. 6-star reviews. Find a way.
Send a ticket to Apple saying, we want 6 stars.
So, poll results, first off. Excuse me. Thaddeus, we should probably introduce you to the audience first off. That would make tons of sense.
So, I am Thaddeus Drake. I am CEO of Unkindness Incorporated and the PvP director of the Valiant Declaration Alliance. I am mad and Scottish and have a horrible accent, so hopefully everyone will be able to understand me through this whole process.
How do you feel about being one step closer to the TARDIS, now that you're Scottish?
I feel great. It's nice to have Malcolm Tucker in the TARDIS, which is fantastic. In fact, if you go to Glasgow, we actually have an old police box in Buchanan Street, so you can go up and touch it and feel part of the Hooniverse, which is fantastic.
That's a place I'm not going to go. It's a game I'm not going to play. Oh, that's very cool. It's good to know there's at least one of those still out there.
Yeah, it's not used anymore, but you know. But it is great thinking the Doctor's Scottish, because it means, well, the Daleks are one step closer to a good stabbing, so...
Ha! That might finally put an end to him. To strike it knifed on camera.
It'll never put an end to him. But you guys already had a Scott as the Doctor.
Yes, we did. Sylvester McCoy, I believe.
Don't forget David Tennant.
And David Tennant, of course, he didn't play it as a... Well, I don't think Sylvester McCoy had a Scottish accent either, did he? But no. Yes, David Tennant, my favourite Doctor.
He definitely didn't play it as a Scotsman, though.
Occasionally he did. You could hear it slip out here and there. But yes, my favourite Doctor.
Ah, I can make a kilt joke. It's right there. Dangling.
Ha ha! Boom!
Just hanging in the wind for you to, knock on.
Yeah, so it's Unkindness Incorporated. You're in Violent Declaration Alliance, or Violent Destruction, but you have a mining wing. Explain how this works.
So VD was originally part of a two-prong duo alliance, which kind of came out of the NARM split and fiasco that happened there up in Canid last year. Black Flag Society was the PvP arm headed up by Nick Scorso, and VD was a more user-friendly PvE / indie / PvP when you want alliance. So Unkindness Incorporated had moved to that area just before they arrived from Canid when they got chased out by EESYJ. We had a bit of a habit of, you know, do your PvE mining through the day, make money, and then in the evening let's form up a 15-man MOA fleet and take it up and down the LOSEC pocket. So that was all well and good for a while. Then I had the crazy harebrained scheme of, you know, there's a system of LOSEC next door and we're in the LOSEC island. Why don't we start knocking down some pauses and make some money? So we got into a very, very DPS-heavy, light-on-tank Abaddon fleet, because I thought, well, let's knock it down as quick as possible. Knocked down a few pauses and then... people came knocking at our door and going, we think you should come here. So at the time, I didn't really want to get my guys into CTAs and stuff because RL is more important than EVE. I hope I don't get shot by anyone for saying that.
No, we're all with you on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of elected to take the guys into VD, which was a bit more user-friendly. Or so I thought at the time. As it turned out, things kind of went crazy in terms of who came down to Aridia, where we stayed at the time. There was a kind of gang up of easily excited and surely you're joking on us because of, well, EVE politics and space stuff. So that really ended with Black Flag Society fail-scathing somewhat. People going their separate ways, and we were left in a very hostile region with an indie team and one corp that kind of almost PvP'd regularly. So,
almost.
Yeah, almost PvP'd regularly, yeah. So I kind of got the job as PvP director. Now, bear in mind, before this, I'd been a junior FC, okay? And before that, I'd been a bomber FC for Kaldari Militia. So my experience was somewhat limited at the time. We had originally, before Black Flag split, had a hack doctrine. I think it was Zealots at the time. But when you looked at fleets of what went out, you'd only maybe, in a 30-man fleet, see 6 Zealots, and the rest would be Omen Navy issues. So very quickly, my philosophy of training people and approach to doctrines was it should be a complementary exercise. So everything you were training for a specific ship would be for a reason, and that would feed into the next ship that you trained. And I think, I don't know what you guys think, having fought us, I mean, this is only 4 or 5 months after all this initial madness happened, I think that's really put us in good stead, and I think it's a sustainable model to bring people who are less experienced with PvP or less skilled from PvP into an environment where they can be a credible low-sec or indeed small corner of null-sec entity.
I'm sure Ali's got opinions on that, but yeah, I think you're about right. You know, it's important for people that are lower SP to really learn early on that they have to make the most of every one of them, because, you know, if you max out, say, all the assault frigate skills and all the assault frigate related skills, and then you fight another veteran player, he could have 100 million skill points, you could have 10 million skill points or whatever, but if you're in the same ships and you both have it maxed out, like, that's it, you're on even ground with him.
Yeah,
and in
absolutely.
A fleet situation, you know, what are you going to do, stay docked? No, you need to figure out how you're going to fit in to whatever you're about to go into. There's no such thing as a completely useless ship. Even if you have a weird set of skills, there's something you can fly that complements that fleet. I'm talking to Noir Academy about this next week. Got a whole seminar planned out about it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think on Saturday's meta show, the Mitanni said quite rightly, in my opinion, that no low SP player is useless, because look at the example Brave Collective have. You can throw them into Molluses and make them supremely effective against, you know, characters with 90, 100, 110 million skill points, which is fantastic. And for me, it's about utilizing people to the very best of what they can do, and if you can guide them on a course that's not going to benefit them now in this fleet, but it's going to benefit them 6 months down the line in terms of their expertise and how they fly.
Absolutely. Alright, so we'll hold the rest of this story for the contract wrap-up, where VD's recent activities brought them into conflict with one Noir / Suddenly Spaceships Alliance. And very interesting events and outcomes related to that. It's sure to be a lively and informative contract discussion. Before we move on, though, I want to give a shout-out to our sponsor, Eve Time Code. EveTimeCode.com, where your business counts. One Plex for every $250 sprint. You get it free. Spend $250, free Plex. Bam, easy. And they accept Bitcoins now, and allegedly endorsed by the Macho Man. You can check out earlier episodes for that one. I don't dare bring him back into the studio.
No, we ran out of Fanta. We can't bring him back into the studio.
Besides, he's the cream. He's rising to the top. He doesn't have time for us. But he does have time for Eve Time Code, apparently. So EveTimeCode.com. Go check it out. Probably the best place to buy time codes that ever is and ever will be. They really do support the community quite a bit, so go support them right back. Poll results. Phoebe, patch success. 96% yes. One dude voted no.
Boo.
Dinsdale, I'm looking at you. I presume it's him. I can't imagine who else it would be. Maybe it was that guy that lost the billions of worth of Bowhead Blueprint originals getting ganked in HiSec. I'm sure that guy's not feeling too happy about the patch. But yeah, overwhelming support for the Phoebe patch. It's hard to argue with it. I mean, it's had the upside of really catalyzing low-sec activity, but at the same time, we just saw in HID GP, which we'll talk about in a little bit, a big 0-0 fight. It wasn't maybe on the same level as Asakai, but it was pretty damn close. And it happened. It's still possible. It took hours to develop. It took a really weird set of circumstances to develop, but it can still happen. And at the same time, you've got all this low sec activity happening. You've got all this, all these conflicts breaking out in 0-0 as people look a little closer to their borders for fights. So I think we're seeing the best of both worlds.
No, as I said, depending on how the patch went, you know, I'd be eating crow, and I have to say, CCP did it. They thoroughly impressed me with Phoebe, and it's reinvigorating to be running around on a newly created, you know, 3-4 week old, you know, tune and rolling around in my Rifter and actually getting fights and good fights.
And they're following it up with a great one. Oh, sorry, Al, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that one of the most interesting things to me was hearing some of the Hero Coalition After Action reports and sort of noodling following the Head GP fight. It was pretty clear that not only did it develop kind of differently, but the lessons that people learned from it were different from the lessons that they might have learned from previous large NullSec fights.
Do you want to go into that a little bit? Because I haven't read those.
Mostly it was just, you know, talking, especially with folks from Sound about, like, oh, well, you know, is it better to, if you have a small group of people, is it better for them to be in bombers, or is it better for them to be cutting off reinforcements, you know? One of the things I heard from one of the Sound FCs was they were just keeping a gate clear so reinforcements could come in, and that did a lot for that fight, which... It's a different way of thinking.
Different, yeah, but in some ways it's come full circle, because before the really major proliferation of Titans, I mean, every alliance had them, but they weren't quite as numerous, quite as reliable. You often had people exiting or coming back into fights through gates. They may have bridged there initially, but they didn't have the rapid-fire bridging that they'll have now. And that was one of the best parts of those fights. I remember Nor had not an entire contract about that, but a significant portion of our contract was that down in Providence, where we manned the gate while AAA did their thing in an extremely tie-dyed to hell system. We were stopping people from coming in, and we caught dozens of reinforcements before they could get onto the battlefield.
Oh, yeah. The pipe camps? Oh, God, that was so much fun. But yeah, no, it reminds me of old time. It actually takes me back a bit into the early parts of it, where you would have, you know, 20, 30, you know, player, you know, 20, 30 ship fleets sitting on gates holding security, and the micro battles that would break out there as the major fight between capitals and big subcap fleets, battleships and capitals and super capitals, were duking it out, you know, at some planet or some POS or some moon, and then you'd have these little micro fights that would be breaking out on gates to either allow ships to get in, reinforcements to get in, or to blockade from allowing things to get through. It's really interesting. I think it's really good for the game, especially for the people that have been looking for that reinvigoration, especially in low sec.
It's good for the fun and it's good for the servers.
Yes.
Which is not a small part of the equation, in my view. So, EVE news. Let's just jump right into it. Pandemic Legion versus Hero Coalition has had some interesting developments. Mostly that super caps are starting to die at a pretty rapid clip. A Titan and an Aeon were killed at catch. Pandemic Legion put a super fleet into Head GP for a timer fight. and Brave proceeded to rage bubble them for hours and hours on end. They didn't even worry so much about killing them, at least initially. It was just, we're tired of you dropping supers on us, then now they're not going to go anywhere. Like, congratulations on being an EGP, you're never going to leave. And they just carpeted them with bubbles, like an entire noob swarm of interdictors, just bubbling everywhere. And then eventually, Black Legion came over and other alliances threw their cards on the table. And they were in a pretty bad position. They did wind up losing a Titan, and to escape, they had to bring in their entire Titan fleet to Doomsday Dreadnoughts and basically scare the rest of EVE off the grid, just so they could limit their losses to the one Titan and the few super capitals and carriers that they happen to have.
Not super accurate, but...
Oh, well, go ahead, Turtle, correct me.
Well, so it was, you're right up to, they didn't bring Titans on to save, so that Titan that died belonged to Hurley, who's an Alta PK, and it was more really more of like hubris in jumping that thing in that got it killed, because they didn't need it at all. And it was just kind of more like, oh, let's really fucking be dicks about it. And so he got his comeuppance for that.
So the Ragnarok that died wasn't part of the initial...
Yeah, not initially. It was trying to take part in something that it really had no business taking part of, because there were Aeons and Erebuses already on field, just fucking DD in those dreads. And so the Ragnarok was just an easy target. And so Black Legion was posted up, just basically waiting for Brave to bubble. They weren't going to come in unless Brave bubbled, so Brave bubbled it, and Black Legion brought in like 100 Ishtars or something ridiculous, and then Brave started reshipping into Dommies, just bumping the shit out of it. And so yeah, they caught a Titan, a super, like a couple carriers and stuff, but the Rag actually got caught outside of GE TAC. I think it was SV5 maybe or something.
Ah.
But yeah, so he was trying to get out, and then that super that died was somebody multiboxing supers that warped to a gate, went instead of aligning, and then in the infinite wisdom that ensued, decided to jump through the gate despite the fact that there were like 6 to 10 interdictors just waiting at zero for him to jump. So basically everything that died that night was out of stupidity in one way or another. It's kind of funny. But yeah, it's
I mean
cool.
That the Butcher's Bill wasn't a lot higher as a testament to the way Pandemic Legion runs their fleets, because they were in... I mean, you don't have to be a PvP expert to see that the situation they were in was pretty dire. I mean, they were well pinned down.
Yeah, that is true. They whelped a lot of Mercurials onto it, but they're all just like Tech 2 fit, and Mercurials are pretty cheap, so that wasn't too bad. But yeah, BL did a really good job. I mean, they had Dictors. They had Dictors that pinned the carriers, the Wrecking Ball that came in to like 70k or 80k out or something. That's just, that was their job, was once those guys sino in, just make sure they can't get on top of that Titan and save it.
Okay, cool. In terms cool of the larger fight, Turtle, do you have any insight on where that momentum is right now?
Yeah, at some point they like turned a corner in the last couple of weeks, and they're really starting to like put up fights, I guess, in a way. Not that they weren't putting up fights before, but I think at some point, yeah, they just got tired of getting dropped all the time, and so they like did things like bubble Titans, which they probably wouldn't have done in the past.
Do you think it's maybe a belief that Hero has now that they can actually, you know, take on the bigger boys, you know, the PL being the kind of the elite of the elite? If they can take down a Titan, they take down supers, to them it's like, you know, making a god bleed. They have that belief now.
I'm sure it gets them like excited, riled up.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Absolutely.
But I think Turtle made the point on one of the last shows. I don't think whether or not it was the last show or the one before that, you know, Brave has the capability to massively outnumber PL, and they really could put him in a bind if they wanted to. And maybe part of the problem is simply just confidence, and now that they have it, or if not confidence, they're just too mad to care anymore. I think that makes them quite dangerous to PL.
I think they could be dangerous if 299 out of 300 of members weren't in high sec fucking care bearing. Like, this is a 12,000 man coalition that typically doesn't break like 100 or 200 in fleet. You know, those are really small numbers for the size of that coalition.
Yeah, it's pretty
where,
brutal.
Where
yeah,
are absolutely. All these dudes? Like, they're all in HiSec or they're all somewhere else, but they sure shit aren't in GE Tech, because guarantee you, if you undock 2,000 frigates, like, really not much anyone's going to do against that.
2,000 Merlins. GG.
Yeah, it's fun. So, I mean, Peel's been taking Sov here and there, and then Brave will come back and take it back, and just hitting Hedge VP at the moment. But it seems to be where everything's happening. Black Legion just redeployed down to us for 2 weeks. CFC has been making some appearances, not really in force, but like DBRB showed up to this, and or the Hedge VP timer just now. So they're looking at it, and it's like one of the places I think people want to go for conflict.
Well, it's certainly the highest profile. I mean, the whole Pandemic Legion Hero Coalition thing has been the highest profile thing for a while now. At least that's in my opinion. I don't know how you guys feel, but it's certainly one of the more interesting conflicts, and it's where a lot of news has been happening. There's a lot of stuff going on with the CFC, which we're going to talk about, and there's stuff going on in Geminate and Wicked Creek and some of the NPC 00 regions to an extent, like Venal in particular, but I don't think any of that's as interesting as Hero Coalition, this like gigantic coalition of newbies being attacked by PL, this really concentrated elite super veteran alliance. It's like a David Goliath type thing. Not exactly David Goliath, but it's like two completely opposite strengths clashing over space. It's cool to see. And I think anything Pandemic Legion does, you know, even though they have had some setbacks, they're still superstars. They're still quite relevant, and people want to know what they're doing. They want to follow what's going on with them.
Yeah,
and plus, wherever they go, Black Legion eventually follows, so.
Nobody was really too cut up about that Titan loss and all that shit. And if I don't know if you listen to the comms recording, which was kind of dumb, but Grat said it perfectly. He's like, you don't just log all the supers on to save you and then log off, because that's what fucking BK did. He just died in his Titan and immediately logged off. It was like, oh, okay. That was the one thing people were upset about, but like, yeah, I mean, people get caught all the fucking time. It happens.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of Wicked Creek, there have been some developments in the Wicked Creek front. We haven't talked about it tons in the show, mostly because it's been fairly boring lately. But there have been some interesting ones in that space is changing hands a lot more frequently than previously expected. Gorgon Empire has really stepped up the pace at which they're taking Wicked Creek. Them and their allies are stripping that space away from NC and Nully at a pretty rapid clip now. And an interesting thing is that they're freeporting quite a few of the stations. So Wicked Creek now has probably a higher proportion of freeport stations than in any Sov region, which is kind of cool. I don't know why anyone would go to Wicked Creek, but if you ever did, you could dock there.
I think that's the exact reason why they're making it a freeport, making so many freeport stations, bringing some people to come play around in there.
Yeah, turn into sort of pseudo NPC null.
Mm-hmm.
And it's near NPC null technically, but not NPC null that anyone uses, because the way the space is laid out, there's only a small number of stations quite close to Empire, and the rest of it is stationless out toward where Wicked Creek is for like quite a long way. So it's an interesting dynamic for sure. Also interesting in that Gorgon Empire has involved itself in a conflict in Geminate. So not only are they taking systems in Wicked Creek and Skelding Pass, but they're actually going to be involved in the Geminate fighting with all the rest of the Russians. And before we move on to that, I have reminded myself that Gorgon Empire is asserting that Emma Watson is also a freeport. Anyone who's wondering?
Giggity.
They have freeported her. We're good to go. As far as the Geminate, it's some hot Russian-on-Russian action up there. It had been a buffer zone between N3 and the CFC, and it was currently run by Xdeath, basically because they're friends with the leaders of both, mostly through CSM and some historical conflicts and stuff like that. No one really wants Geminate, and they just sort of agreed to let Death have it. And so he's just kind of there. He doesn't really owe allegiance to either group, but he just knows that they know that he's not going to start shit with either of them, so bam, he's got it. And he can rent part of it out, and has his own systems that don't get rented out, and whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's Russians. You know how that goes, people. Well, shit's going down. Solar and Red Alliance have sort of patched things up, I guess, and are back on the same side now. And they're going to be joined by Gorgon Empire. Allegedly, European Union is going to show up. That's the Euro wing, or at least part of the Euro wing of CFC. And they're going at it. Solar has been making pushes in the LoSec regions bordering Geminate, taking some towers to make money and that sort of thing. And now they've been officially launched an invasion of Geminate's entry system, BWF. It's going to be quite a pitched fight, but I think my hunch is that while Red Alliance has been struggling and Solar hasn't really been involved meaningfully in a successful campaign in a long time, I feel like Xdeath hasn't either. And Solar, Red A, and all those guys have the numbers advantage in a fairly big way. I have a feeling that Xdeath's like supplemental forces may be mostly Renner-ish type alliances, and those are not going to last nearly as long as the like actual fully formed alliances that Solar and RA have brought into the conflict. Turtle, what do you think?
I don't really know anything about what they're doing down there. It doesn't really get much publicity. I don't really follow it. I mean, like you said, nobody really wants Geminate, so...
Well, that's the thing. Nobody really wants Geminate, and it's Russian conflict, so a lot of the information is going to be going back and forth on Russian language forums. But if Geminate switches hands, it could have some interesting implications for the politics of the North, because Solar and RA aren't going to be as interested in maintaining a truly neutral position like Xdeath was. King, I know you've got opinions on Russians.
In Soviet Russia...
No.
Region takes you.
Yeah, exactly. No, honestly, I haven't really paid much attention to Geminate and exactly what's going on here. Again, it just like Turtle said, no one really cares about Geminate, so it's... I don't know. I don't really have an opinion on it. I can't really form an opinion on it because I'm not... You know, I don't know what's going on.
That's fair.
But I do see, you know, Russian Civil War on, you know, I'll put my tinfoil hat on and say Russian Civil War is on the front, is coming.
Oh, it's here, baby. Russian Civil War confirmed. The only real question, I guess, is how bloody it's going to be and how disruptive it's going to be to the rest of the area. You know, depending which smaller CFC alliances get pulled into the fighting, that could have some implications on whoever comes out on top. And I think it's, more than anything, it's just one of those interesting things that this could have happened any time in the past couple years, but it never did. But now that Phoebe has happened, all of a sudden these guys feel like it's feasible to have that fight, you know?
Well, again, it's because of Phoebe. It's the fact that they have to watch what they're doing because, you know, you can't jump your supers across, you know, the vast distance of space and then jump them back the next day to, you know, to handle your business. So you have to pick and choose your fights. So, I mean, heck, I even feel like, you know, any small up-and-coming alliance has an opportunity if they pick the right spots and they pick the right times. They can hold 0-0 for quite a while, especially if they pick the right spots where it'll force a major power to have to divert, you know, super capital resources away from what would feasibly be a stronger line that they need to maintain a presence at.
Speaking of, and this is like a really, really small
side effect. I don't want to spend too much more time on this because, like everybody is saying, no one really cares about Geminate, but the alliance that had previously been trying to force VV Freeport Republic out of the stations that they took after the patch is going to be involved in the fighting in Geminate. So that looks like it'll give a little breather to them, perhaps, since, like you said, they're not going to be able to maintain a heavy capital presence in both places at once.
Yep, it's going to force them to make a decision. Which front is more important?
Now the thing that people do care about, CFC. CFC having the technically not the largest amount of systems, but certainly have the biggest target on their back. Well, Phoebe hit, you knew people were going to start fighting, and sure enough, it's happening. CFC has somehow managed to put together a three-front war. Although I guess it's down to two now that Black Legion is temporarily redeployed. But they had... They're fighting Triumvirate in Northern Venal. They're fighting Black Legion in, like, Pure Blind / Near Venal. Or they were fighting Black Legion in Pure Blind / Near Venal. And down in, I believe, Fountain is where the fighting is happening right now. They are fighting off a Nulli invasion. Or at least part of the CFC is. And somehow... It's all working out. I don't think anybody really saw that coming, except, I guess, the Mitanni. But, so they're somehow managing to hang on to this vast swath of space they've got. They've really only given up one region, and that was voluntarily.
Yeah, so they've given up one region. I mean, it's one thing to give it up voluntarily when you know you're just about to lose it anyway. They've given up that region. The other ones, you're right, they're hanging on, but they can't, you know, CFC can't really come down and seriously be involved in any of the stuff in Kedge, for example, which is a definite departure from the pre-Phoebe situation. And I can imagine that as, you know, as three front wars and whatnot go on, it starts to hurt some of the coalition unity at least a little bit.
They could show up. They would just have to rebase their northern fleet down to south. I mean, they'd have to move. Like, they couldn't divert what they got going on in the south, because then they'll just end up losing space. But I mean, that fleet in the north now, really all they have to do is just reinforce BL pauses, and how long are they going to want to do that?
Well, CFC, they'll probably do it all damn day, because that's what they do better than any alliance, I think, is grind structures. That's just kind of their thing. But, I mean, if Black Legion redeploys, then they're free to redeploy to follow them. I suspect probably won't right away, because, like Turtle said, they'll probably reinforce some pauses just to twist the knife a little bit. But if pressure gets relieved on one of those three fronts, I mean, clearly they have the capability to sustain the three different conflicts at the same time. That group, whatever group gets put on break... If they don't actually want to go on break and they want to go get some content, they can go anywhere they want. So I think it shows a lot of organizational capacity in the CFC. If, like was mentioned, they can keep that coalition unity together over time, which will probably be the biggest threat.
Well, I go back to, you know, I think it's right now because most of the pressure is being applied in the south. I think if BL redeploys and there's some in another larger alliance or a larger group kind of go with BL and apply more northern pressure, I think it'll apply strain. And I'd really like to see how well the CFC handles against that kind of serious strain, having to fight hard on three fronts.
Well, okay, so there's nothing of tactical value in the north, right? Because Black Legion lives in an NPC station, they don't hold any south. So there's really little to no reason for them to be hanging out up there in the north without Black Legion around. So on a two-week deployment, I really wouldn't be surprised if you saw them moving sooner or later, because... Frankly, as good as Black Legion is, they just don't really have the numbers to, like, really just go straight up brawl, right? So they could typically match him on Titans, and they could typically match him on Supers, but CFC can always bring in more, and it's not a fight that BL is ever going to want to escalate or take. So, like, what are we doing here? There's nothing going on. Like, it makes sense why you would move, because you're just sitting in whatever system that is, KLP, or I forget what system they're in, and just getting camped in by, you know, 20 Titans and 30 Supers, and all right, this is our night now. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw that shit in the north fizzle out, because frankly, it was really more of a vendetta than anything, not like an actual tactical objective, other than your EPing and quote-unquote wiping out BL. There's literally just, like, no reason to fight in the north.
Yeah, but it was a peen-waving exercise, and I think they've proved their point by forcing them away. Yeah, it's somewhat of a morale. I mean, if you read the State of the Alliance or State of the Union or whatever CFC calls those things nowadays, they were pretty adamant about how, you know, holding Black Legion back, punishing Black Legion was as much about making a point as anything else. Considering that BL does stage an NPC space and can strike at their stuff with impunity, more or less. Yeah, that's got to get frustrating for a while, and to give your line members the opportunity to, even if it's only a victory because you're framing it that way, it's still good for morale.
You're probably good for CFC, I guess. Black Legion probably doesn't really care so much that they have to move or that they sit in station, because they're just as happy. They're just as happy keeping all those people out on grid for 6 to 8 hours without giving them a fight. And I mean, honestly, you know, they're sitting in there in station, but they're doing something else, right? Like, so, you know.
Yeah, really, I mean, that's usually how it went. We were in that alliance. That's pretty much the way it was. But for this, like you said, for the CFC, it's going to be helpful. It doesn't really matter with Black Legion. It's Mitanni's doing that sort of thing to rally his own guys and keep his own morale up. You can't really reliably affect a group like Black Legion like that, but you can frame it in such a way that it looks good for your guys.
Keep them happy.
Yeah. And it's not like you can completely let them demotivate, because if you do, then Black Legion all of a sudden can start taking your stuff. And that presents a whole new set of problems. Alright, in other news. Non-SAV-related news, although I guess it sort of is. IS Boxer and all other input duplication tactics and softwares, tips, tricks, etc. Basically any method that lets you replicate your inputs. Gone. Illegal. Banned by CCP. Yes, and Rage is pointing out in chat here, any kind of hardware, basically the method doesn't matter. If it's allowing you to send an input across multiple clients at the same time, it is now against EULA. You can be banned for it. And I'm like, thank fucking God. Years overdue. Holy shit. It's been some controversy because obviously everyone that's been using IS Boxer is freaking out that they can't run their like 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30 man. I use man in quotation marks because it's really just one guy with a whole bunch of bots. All their mining ops and bombing runs, etc. Yeah, so they're shitting some bricks. They're laying some eggs. And I could give a shit.
I'm extremely happy. It's gonna raise prices on minerals, which is gonna be fantastic for miners and for the Care Bears out there. It's gonna suck for producers like me, and it's gonna suck for the end consumer like you, because you're going to be spending more on material, to refit when you lose stuff, but I think overall for the health of the economy, it's a fantastic move. I mean, honestly, it is. It's an absolutely fantastic move.
Well, Plex has already dropped dramatically. Like, so obviously, these IS Boxer guys were keeping the prices of Plex artificially high.
Oh, yeah. Well, somebody was. I mean, you don't necessarily know if it was people that were multi-boxing like that, using input automation. I mean, they were definitely probably consuming them and adding to the demand, but I mean,
yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, yeah, the speculation could come from anywhere. I think probably once people saw the IS Boxer thing going, I think the speculation kind of petered out a little bit, and so that initial like 150, 200 mil price drop you saw was people kind of making a preemptive move to get out of it.
It may have been a bit of both, but I think the price of Plex had been relatively stable, so I don't know how much speculation there really was of it. It felt like a steady increase rather than a sharp upswing, you know what I mean? Although, perhaps they were sort of reverse speculating, like, oh, the price of Plex is going to bottom out because they're banning multi-boxers. I better sell my stash now.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it was. I mean, that's exactly what happened, is that you're going to have a very large contingent of people who trade in Plex and, you know, either buy and hold long-term and then look for, you know, opportunities to purchase and sell off. I guarantee you that that's what you saw, is that you saw the multi-boxers realize that they're no longer going to be able to support that 30 accounts, you know, with mineral mining. And so they you know, they're getting rid of a third to a half, maybe three quarters of their fleet. So, you know, you're talking 20 out of 30 clients. That's 20 Plex back on the market. You're going to drive demand. Demand's going to go way down, so you're going to see a big price drop.
And I want to specify, multi-boxing, still totally fine. You can run multiple clients at the same time. You just can't run the same command through all those clients at the same time. So people that were using ISBox or another similar devices and softwares, like, if you think about it, there's really no end to the amount of money they could make. Well, so you can constantly expand that fleet. Go ahead, Thaddeus.
Well, I was going to point out that, I mean, if you want an example of the insane money and how this affects it, you look at the Incursion community, for example. You can get one guy running, you know, 10 IS Boxer Nightmares, for example, and he's just going to run Vanguards all day. If one of them dies because, well, it gets alphaed, what, 3, 4, 5 sites, and he can buy another, you know, Nightmare Pirate Faction Battleship? It's crazy. And thank God it's coming out of the game.
Yeah, it's super fucked up to anybody that was not participating in it. Which is the same reason that botting was screwed up. And predictably, if you want, like, probably the best analysis of this in, like, a really straightforward but detailed and well-researched manner, head over to noisy.blogspot.com and go check out Noisy Gamer's blog. Because the botting expert has put up one of the definitive articles about this ISBoxer ruling. So go check out Noisy or Nosy. I forget which is your, whether his URL is Noisy or Nosy, but you can search for it. You'll find it pretty easily. And if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably heard our show with him and are reading his blog already. I hope you are. It's probably one of the best EVE blogs. And yeah, I would say general blogs out there. I mean, it's pretty damn good. And he really brings it all together. He talks about what exactly is banned and why, what some of the consequences are for the different types of players in the game. He links to some other places where you can find more information. In particular, one thing that he linked to, and I haven't had a chance to actually listen to it yet, but there is a guy named Shadow and Light. And apparently he's like a major ISBoxer user. He messaged me a while back asking to come on the show. And I basically told him, like, he could come on, but he'd get his ass reamed. Because I don't think any of us are in support of the kind of, in my view, exploitative gameplay that he engages in. But he did go on Praise Bob podcast, sparring off against none other than Dirk McGurk. And apparently Dirk tore him a new asshole for 2 hours, and I cannot wait to listen to it.
Hearing bits and pieces of that quoted at me on Skype and stuff. Sounded beautiful.
And I'll look up the Noisy Gamer article, and I'll make sure that I'll make sure it's in the show notes here. Yeah, it's called A Quick Note on Input Broadcasting. We'll put it in the show notes here. It's a pretty reasonable read. It's like a page long. Not that bad at all. And well worth your time. And if you've got lots of time, go check out the Praise Bob podcast, because while I haven't listened to it yet, like Ali said, it's pretty beautiful.
And also...
Okay.
I was going to say, also, if you have time to do both of those things, make sure you go to iTunes and give us 5 stars.
Indeed. And finally, to wrap up our extremely long EVE News segment, EVE News 24 attempted to co-opt the Twitter hashtag, #TweetFleet, which is like the official, unofficial hashtag for the EVE Online community. And they were like, hey, let's claim credit for this and make a forum about it. And the resulting backlash was staggering. Like, all of a sudden, my phone was blowing up. Apparently, I got tagged in one such post. I think people were, like, asking for my opinion on it or something. And it's just bam, 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 bam. I was like, what is going on? I had to, like, look up what was happening. And the balls on these guys. Like, I get that it's one of those things, like, I don't know. Like, selling cigarettes to children or something. Like, sure, it'd be great for your business model, but at some point, someone should go, you should probably rethink this idea.
Well, I mean, it's, like, not the first time Riv has ripped off IP, so...
Nor the last, because apparently he's now trying to rip off a podcast or something.
No, there used to be a blog called... Oh, yeah, I wrote podcasts, I'm sorry. It was a blog... called Warp to Zero, and it's written by a guy named Grimash, and he changed the name and the host about 6 months ago, but it's still a pretty recognizable name. I recognized it the minute I heard it, and I was like, oh, okay. So, we're just gonna do that, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know. Unless Riverini really honestly thought that he would be embraced by the EVE community if he did this, which maybe he does, because I know that he tends to... Well, not he necessarily, but his staff tend to be a little isolated from the rest of EVE's opinion of things. But they got a whole cold dose of reality on their Twitter feeds after they released that little nugget. Holy hell. I've never seen TweetFleet tweet about one thing so much, except for, like, EVE expansions. That's about it. And FanFest.
But how did he even come to the to even decide that he was going to try to take credit for TweetFleet? I mean, I don't know.
I think it's just like, hey, this is a cool name for something.
Everyone knows TweetFleet, you guys.
Yeah, everyone loves it. I can just ride that wave.
My guess is he's like a closet... Well, no, he's not a closet narcissist. He's just a narcissist, and he just wanted his name spoken in podcasts and in text format. He's probably just enjoying all of the all of the rage, going, they're talking about me. They're talking about me.
And I'm sure he probably appreciated the bump in traffic EVE News 24 has surely gotten from it all.
Yeah.
But my gut would... Gut instinct slash reason would suggest that those views are not going to continue after everything dies down. And hopefully one would think that people would get a little turned off by it and perhaps go seek their news elsewhere.
I mean, if they hadn't got turned off already by the variable quality of EVE News 24 content, I can't see this doing too much more.
Well, there is that.
I was going to say, wait, EVE News 24, have they actually reported something legitimate lately?
Occasionally they do, but mostly it's just repeats of bad blogs. Yeah, adorable rage in chat, EVE News 24 equals Fox News. Sort of. I mean, I have written for EVE News 24 back when it was like the only source of EVE News. And having worked for both them and themetani.com, and having seen how almost like the process of EVE News 24, I feel like it's broken down. I have no inside confirmation of that or anything, but I can't imagine things are running the same way now that they were back when I was writing for them. Because it can't be. It doesn't feel right.
So it's just a shame to see it fall the way it's fallen. There's better ways to do it, and at least one site is doing those better ways. Crossing Zebras, I would say, while not a new site exactly, more of an opinion site, has also really upped the quality of the kind of writing and news that goes into EVE for the better, I feel.
I think if we just stopped calling them news sites, it would be okay, because they're all really opinion sites. I mean, there may be some, like, internal journalistic integrity or whatever, but, I mean, let's not act like they're held to any sort of accountable standard.
As opposed to what other news site or broadcast?
Yeah, well, first that, but I also think that, you know, I think that that Crossing Zebra, it is an opinion site, and even to an extent the Mitanni, I think that there is some journalistic integrity there. They do actually try to, you know, present information. It is slanted, and you have to sift through it, but you have to do that with everything you read as far as news goes. So, but yeah.
I think at least for the Mitanni's side of things, like, they do try to report hard news, and, you know, there's not always truly newsworthy things happening, so they make sure that they have content ready to go all the time. And some of that's book reviews or opinion pieces or help articles, etc. And then when there is something that's propaganda-y coming out, they're usually pretty good at putting a disclaimer up at the top. Usually. So, you know, you gotta give them a nod for that. Like, if they put out an Alliance update, they always mention that it's an Alliance update, that it's probably propaganda, not to take it seriously. If there's an author with a conflict of interest, like June when she was writing for Sound and Pravi, usually it's made quite clear that it's an editorial or that this person has this allegiance or whatever. So, you know, it's not always done, but it's frequently done enough that, you know, you can kind of tell that they at least take it somewhat seriously.
And there is some fact-checking done. I mean, again.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to go too into the whole EVE News site drama. It's not really our bag. They can have it out. We just thought that the EVE News 24 thing was a big deal. It was a big social media event. It was in poor taste. It needed to be talked about at least a little bit. All right, so we're going to talk about EVEBET, and then we've got the contract wrap-up. I've got a really big announcement to make. I can't wait to make said announcement. But first, I want to promote the guys that made it possible to have said cool announcement. EVEBET, that's eve-bet.com, New Eden's premier betting service, and really run by a tremendous group of guys. You can bet on real-life sports and esports and EVE stuff with ISK. They've handled literally hundreds of trillions of bets since their opening, so they're extremely trusted. You can bet on stuff like the Alliance Tournament, UFC fights, the NFL, different soccer leagues in Europe, all over the place. Go in there. If it's a big event, you could probably bet on it. If you can't, message them about it. I'm sure they would probably let you bet on it. And all the odds are industry standard. And they being a sponsor of said show, our show, and they're also a sponsor of a few other fantastic podcasts, like Crossing Zebras and a few others. And they've been helping them out with running contests. And I forget exactly what Crossing Zebra's contest was, but it was, I believe, writing or social media related. I really wanted to do something in-game. And when it came our turn for Bam to be like, hey, Alec, here's like a whole bunch of plexes. Let's have a cool contest about it. I was like, yeah, man, let's do that. And I was like, oh man, what could it be? I didn't want to like do like a best tweet or write something or do like a funny picture, although I love funny pictures. I really wanted to do an in-game event because Bam and I and CCP Gargant had been talking about like EV sports and Alliance tournaments and all those kinds of events, and don't necessarily wanted to do something on that level, like Syndicate Competitive League level, but I did want to do something special. So, after noob having run brawl. A whole bunch... Go ahead, King.
Noob ship brawl.
Almost.
Damn.
After having weighed out a whole bunch of stuff, I've decided to pull the trigger on something I've been thinking about doing for a while. I'm going to announce it on the blog, or excuse me, on the blog, on the Declarations of War site in a blog post before this is likely to be released. But just in case you didn't catch that and you're hearing this, go check said post out, because on January 17th, we are going to be hosting the New Eden Grand Prix. So it's brought to you by Declarations of War and EVEbet to commemorate Noir's 7th anniversary, which will be on the 15th. And just to commemorate EVE being awesome, to commemorate us now having manual control of our ships, among other things. And the way this is going to work is it will be a T1 frigate race. All sublight, no warp drives. And not only will it be a straight-up race, but there will also be a series of obstacles that racers have to use their wits, manual piloting skill, and sense of timing to overcome. It's going to be fantastic. One way or the other, we will provide the ships for you. So even if you're a pirate, we're going to hold it in a place where you're not going to get shot by guns. So don't worry about that. Just show up. You'll get a free frigate. You can go out on this course. Of course, everyone will have guns attached to said ships. So you don't have to worry about just the obstacles. There may also be other players that you need to keep your eye on. But the final ships that reach the finish line will win Plex prizes and possibly some other goodies depending on sponsors and availability and all that kind of stuff. I will put more updates out as we go. Check out declarationsofwar.com for the full rules and details. But basically, just show up in your pod, follow race instructions, have an awesome time. And we hope for CCP to be helping us to promote the event to make it as big and awesome as it can be. I'm quite pumped, having thought through some of the obstacles that you guys might be going through. And of course, the whole thing is going to be casted. So if you don't actually want to race or you can't make it for whatever reason, you will be able to tune in and keep an eye on who's winning and see all the crazy stuff we're going to make them do.
Smart bombs.
Yes, actually, at one point. I don't want to go into, I don't want to ruin it, but there will be at least one challenge involving smart bombs. Multiple smart bombs. Definitely going to be a good time.
Must time your run.
Oh, yeah.
Through the smart bomb cycles.
So, contract wrap-up. This is the reason we have Thaddeus here. Besides him being a big fan of the podcast and someone that had tried out for Noir Mercenary Group back when that was a thing that we were doing, Thaddeus is also, as he said, the PvP director for Violent Declaration, who we just happened to have a contract against. So, Thaddeus, why don't you... Because I've been talking for a whole bunch... Why don't you talk us through a little bit, like the TLDR version, of how this whole situation in the Sukhanan pocket happened to be. And for those that aren't aware, Sukhanan is a constellation in Tash Merkon that's really near one of the entrances to Providence, but it's a low-sec island. So it's just a little pocket of low-sec with a one high-sec connection, and like that's it. So just tell us how things developed, how they developed down there.
So we left Iridia maybe 2.5-3 months ago, probably closer to 2.5 months ago. And then we're basically homeless, looking for a place to go, found this little pocket, did some research on it and found that Silent Infinity, who are a Provi Block Alliance, basically held the entire thing. So we thought, well, we'll go down, make some content, have some nice fights, and see what we can do. So came down, Silent Infinity didn't exactly take kindly to that. So we had some really good fights with them to start. they weren't pleased when we killed a few of their capital ships one morning after downtime. So I think straight after that engagement, we had a string of high-sec war decks, which was fun. We didn't really have much of a problem with that. We just kind of got on with things as normal. Encouraged the new bros to do their thing in low-sec, and that was absolutely fine. Kept fighting, doing our thing, creating content, and training our guys up. Then, obviously, a week passed, the intel came in that Noir would be, and suddenly spaceships would be entering the fray. And I had a little fanboy moment. A massive fanboy moment.
I had like 5 mails in my inbox.
Five and a convo. But yeah, man, I mean, the entire conflict's been great. I mean, we don't take it massively seriously, losing things. Obviously, being the PvP director, I like Killboard Green. But, I mean, for a young group of PvP guys, watching you work has been fantastic. And it's been, the quality of fight has been above and beyond what we were experiencing in this pocket before. Not to take anything away from AFK, who are, you know, again, I think, you know, in terms of their PvP experience, relatively young as well. It's a lot of industry guys in there. But fighting Noir has been a fantastic experience for me as an FC and for the PvP team in general in VD.
I was somewhat struck by how, like, two sides of the same coin you guys were. I mean, you're both youngish PvP alliances with an industrial background. You're both even flying the same fleet doctrines against each other.
Yeah, that was kind of a shock when we came down.
Yeah, it's just a bit strange. I mean, it's a very even contest. I think you guys have a bit more... a little bit more organization in that, you know, just the ability to form and get out on time for like timer ops and stuff. I think you guys have that down a bit more. I think you had a bit more skills invested in shield reps, which obviously have sort of dual use, not only for PvP combat, but also for repairing structures, which definitely gave you a defensive advantage.
Well, I mean, I don't know if the shield rep stuff kind of helped a lot. We did have people, you know, in pause praise and stuff like that, but I wouldn't say it was in any vast numbers. I think the major difference is that we have a really good upper echelon in the PvP team, and I've got to give massive props to our spy master and our spy team, who will obviously remain nameless. They are the best, you know, covert team that I've worked with in the game. But the PvP team's been great, and, you know, we examine every fight after it's happened. We are EFT warriors when we're not in space. And we kind of try and think as much as we can of, okay, we are fighting outnumbered. I mean, even against AFK, we're fighting outnumbered. Let's not, you know, beat around the bush. I think at AFK, at the last count, outnumbered us 2.5 to 1. So that's, 250% more people.
I think it really depended on the time zone. For a European time zone, at least in the numbers they were on docking, I think you guys had them beat out.
Yeah, I'd probably give you that, yeah. We really operate more late EU, early US, and then into proper US time zone, whereas I think their time zone is strongest on US. From memory, I think we've only maybe lost 2 big engagements with them, and 1-4, I think, 3 or 4. And the first one was where we'd just come into the pocket, and we'd lost a couple of triage archons against, you know, I think 5-6 dreads maybe. And it was pretty evenly matched in terms of numbers. They just, you know, they had the stuff in the pocket. What then happened was, after that engagement, we went back and were able to assess, right, this is what they have here. And I think that plays to our strength in that we can go back and have this really in-depth analysis. And I mean, we even against, I mean, when you guys came into the fray, we had the analysis all done of what you were flying and how you were flying it. The only thing that we didn't have was the SP and the numbers to be able to counter it effectively.
So the details of the contract specifically were our orders, which unfortunately got leaked to Thaddeus. Someone forwarded the contract mail. It was like the first time that's happened in 6-7 years, easily. It really hasn't happened often, if ever, to my mind. So that was a bit upsetting. But
sorry, mate.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It all worked out. We were hired to tip the scales of the war in favor of Solid Infinity, and we had a large list of contract targets in terms of structures to hit, as well as just, you know, be on hand to try to put as much pressure on VD and company as possible. And the targets included, like, whole systems of POCOs, two small towers. There was one large tower, which turned out to be, like, the absolute freaking bane of existence. Holy balls.
Big props go out to my buddy Ulrich for that. Ulrich, the master of the paws. He did a good job setting that bad boy up for you.
Holy God. That thing is a monster. It worked out pretty well. We came in, we were supposed to get started on Friday. We wound up getting started on Thursday because we moved down a lot faster than we anticipated. We reinforced everything except the large tower in the first 24 hours, which was pretty astonishing, at least from my perspective. This was something that I expected us to take 1 to 2 weeks to get done. And like, oh, it's done in a day. And you took out a lot of the modules on the large tower. Okay, wow, alright. And, yeah, we had a fight on one of the POCOs against Thaddeus's boys. And it was a pretty tense armor sacrilege with Guardian support versus these guys in Abaddon's, Armageddon's with triage carriers. And it was pretty tense for quite a while. Eventually, it was just a bit too much. The DPS was just a bit too much. And our Guardians eventually lost cohesion on one or two ships that went down. And we wound up having to withdraw. We lost a couple hacks there, but it was a pretty close fight,
five.
I'd say.
Five.
Five hacks.
Sorry,
yeah.
My throat was...
Five hacks, and we popped several of your battle cruisers in exchange.
You did, absolutely, yeah.
But it's basically us going back and forth on, like, you would try to, like, trip up our logi, we'd try to trip up your logi, and it was whoever could do that the most times, it seemed. And I'm not sure what the tipping point was, but one thing that we suspect happened was one of the ships that died on accident happened to be a squad commander, and such that links were lost either in the logi crew or in the squad of the ships that you guys were targeting, and then it broke. And it just cut through from that.
Yeah, I think that first hack going down changed the nature of the engagement, definitely, because I think you guys had the alpha to take out our Augur group. Obviously, as I say, the SP's significantly lower, but when you tell guys you're fighting an Ishtar gang or a SAT gang, as it turned out, I think initially you guys had come out in Ishtars to RF the POCO, yeah? So, I mean, you've got pilots who this is the situation, that's what they can fly, right? And that's the only PvP ship they can fly, and they're training for a Guardian and they're really eager to get into a Guardian, right? You tell them you're going to get alpha'd off the field, I wouldn't come, and they're like, no, I'm going to come. So you can't help but lose guys like that in the early stages of that fight. What changed it, I guess, was our triage coming on field.
Yeah, that definitely
for us
definitely changed.
And then
we knew you had it
too.
It was a big mistake on our part. Our FC for that op did not plan ahead for the intel that we had on hand. We knew that they would fly like brick tank battleships. We knew that they would have a triage carrier available and would be likely to bring it. And it was the sort of thing like, well, if you know all these things ahead of time, like with our alliance capabilities, you can totally have some dreadnoughts or our own triage carrier available to counter.
Absolutely.
But none of that was prepped ahead of time. So when your triage carrier landed and the second triage carrier landed, it, like RFC was scrambling around trying to like find a pilot for these ships, and like, we had Guardian pilots like, oh, well, I could go, but then you're going to lose the Guardian chain. And reps were barely holding on, so that wasn't really an option.
I think that kind of thing for me set the whole tone of the campaign. I think that's why, you know, I think for maybe 80% of it, you guys may have felt yourselves getting blueballed a little bit, and we picked and chose our fights. I mean, we numerically and in terms of SP, we didn't have the means to fight you guys, so we had to pick and choose our fights, A, when you guys weren't as strong, and B, when we thought that you were complacent. Now obviously you guys are professional at this, and you know, we don't think, oh god, they're not going to get complacent, but obviously it happens, like in that fight for example, and then another fight that happened after that.
Yeah, the second day, Friday, was basically full of complacency. Both fights were FC'd by the same person.
Yeah.
And it was just a complete failure to prepare ahead of time. And there's no other way to describe it. Things that totally should have been done, like having cyno inhibitors deployed before we put capitals down, that didn't happen. Like little things that you know you should do ahead of time just were not done. Either because of the FC style or because he really underestimated you guys. I don't know what happened, but...
Yeah. I think we tried to... I mean, we saw that obviously the same guy was FCing both fights, or, well, both engagements on the second day, and I think that's why we were confident enough to do what we did in that second fight that we'll probably go on to.
You might as well talk about that. Go for it.
Well, obviously, we fought the SAC gang, and I think the tables turned in our favour, and I think the Noir FC at the time thought it best
It was not a Noir. Suddenly Spaceships FC
My apologies, it's just so hard with all this Noir in the channel. Sorry, the Suddenly Spaceships FC, my bad, sorry. Pulled range to get out of the relatively short range of our battleships, which is a maneuver that, you know, anybody did do. So I kind of thought, right, let's count our chickens and disengage now with the kills we've got. So then after that, I think...
Oh, it was so good you did that, by the way, because I had logged on and a few other Norpots logged on. We finally rearranged the deck chairs such that we could get what we needed to crack your fleet.
When you came back, I think, in a ECM goo, didn't you?
Yeah, I went with the ECM goo first, and then someone else logged on and was like, I think it was Greb. Greb logged on, one of my EU directors, who owns a triage carrier but isn't quite very skilled for it yet. And he's like, well, we're trying to figure out who can fly what. It's like, well, I've got a triage carrier I could give someone. And I was like, I could fly it, and I'm not in a Guardian. Mm-hmm. So I warped out, and I was about to... get the carrier on contract, and we had like three dreads ready to go in about 30 seconds.
I was kind of adding up in my head, right, how long have these guys been in the field, how long have they had to rearrange their shit and bring the correct tool for the job, and thought at that time, right, we started killing hacks, I called for a triage red, and when they were both red, it just so happened you guys pulled range, so we thought, right, now's the opportune moment, I think. Although I think Eon, because it wasn't just VD you guys were hired against, it was Echoes of Nowhere, our good French buddies that you got hired against as well. And I think from memory there was maybe a hero Myrmidon that started burning towards you when I called for an extraction. So I don't know whether that maybe got lost in translation to our French friends, but I see adorable in chats going yes. But did he get out? I can't remember if he got out or not, but You should have heard me on comms. I don't know if anyone's familiar with the thick of it, but it was definitely a Malcolm Tucker moment from me.
For you guys pulling out was probably the best decision you made that entire fight, because if you had stayed even 60 seconds longer, you would have lost both triage carriers and a fair-sized portion of that battleship fleet.
Absolutely.
It was just one of those things, like, where you took your winnings, like, you won the big hand of poker, and then rather than staying in the game, you're like, all right, I'm out, we're good.
Yeah,
and absolutely. It was a very veteran decision for you to make. It was very cool.
Well, thank you, man. But the whole day of Friday was really about showing the guys. I think, like I said about Brave earlier on, that, you know, you guys are held in really high regard by a lot of our dudes. So it was kind of a case of, right, let's show them that you can bleed and then we'll go away.
Well, speaking of bleeding, you might as well talk about the biggest thing of blood loss, which was our attempt at the tower.
So, yeah, I think you went for the large tower in Ordat, which is our home system. There was a capital group got deployed with some Silent Infinity subcap support. It wasn't really a lot of subcap support, was it, from memory?
No. Hindsight wasn't enough, but we thought it would be enough at the time. And the real kicker was Sino jammers, mobile silencer inhibitors were not deployed when they should have been. And the there was a moment, like, we had scouts everywhere. We saw every movement you guys were making. When you undocked the ship, we knew about it in a second.
Yeah.
So we knew that there was activity happening. We knew your numbers were going up, and information was given to the FC about that. But it either just didn't click, or it clicked a little too late, and an extra siege cycle was called for that should never have been called for. And if we had just stopped at the one and jumped out, we probably would have been all right.
That might be slightly circumstantial. Because we caught wind of the caps coming on field, and then it was a mad scramble. Right, what can we do? What can we do? So fortunately for us, our friendly neutral supercap pilot had logged on. So we decided, right, can we do this? Can we drop this? And the debate came, do we go with a subcap gang to support, or do we just go balls deep? So I think from what you guys saw of what we brought, it was definitely the balls deep approach. So I think we only had maybe a 15, certainly less than 20 man gang, got in the battleships, Sino Armageddon, came out, dropped Sino, pointed what we could, dropped the supers on you, and I think we butcher's bill was, what, 9-10 billion?
It was about 10 billion. Yeah. Dreadnought, 2 carriers.
Ducky's Dreadnought, man.
It may have been a bit less than 10, actually, because we had taken a little bit earlier.
Aye.
So it was probably about 8.5 to 9, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it looks like, looking at the fight report, it looks like it's 8.9, so just call it 9, Bill.
Yeah, call it 9. So that was a really good experience for our guys, getting that kind of morale boost against the big bad, because I think there may have been a general feeling when we heard about the contract from some of the younger members that it was all doom and gloom, and we tried to reinforce that, you know what, it doesn't matter if they take everything down in the pocket, we're gonna have a fight anyway, and we're gonna make an account of ourselves.
Oh, there was so much anger at the time.
I can imagine.
So much anger.
I can imagine. I did say to the guys that I wouldn't want to be on your comms at that time.
But an interesting thing earlier, like, so we lost the SAC fleet, as I mentioned, but then your fleet warped off, and basically what happened was, even though we had lost that fight, admittedly not the hugest blowout, but we definitely lost it, we went on to destroy the POCO that you guys were trying to save, and we destroyed every other POCO that was coming out that day. So there was already kind of a tempo of, okay, maybe we'll have a slight setback, we just keep pushing on and we'll win. And it took, like, a day of, like, getting over it. And then people were just like, alright, well, it's contract, we're gonna go keep killing all these objectives. And then more fights happened. And I was not confident that we would even find enough ships to kill to bring all that back, because we were like $6 billion in the hole at that point. Yeah. But circumstances just sort of happened that they were. First, we killed a pair of carriers that were in Teshkat.
They weren't us.
Oh, we didn't know that at the time.
I know. I'm just putting out just the
carriers
list.
Fighting
they were not
us.
Us.
Like,
they were
oh, fuck these guys. ED. It's like, oh, carriers fighting us. Time to get dunked. And then we had a whole bunch of engagements with our Ishtar fleet, which we switched over to, and I was FCing more Ishtars, which you guys had a bit of trouble dealing with, and it was like one fight, victory, and then we caught you guys again, victory. We went after the large tower. You guys tried to stop us a couple times, and we won that exchange, and that trade,
well,
and that exchange, and so on and so
well,
forth, and it just added up over time.
I think we, in the fight, maybe Wednesday or Thursday, I don't remember, on the tower, was very tough because we did lose the S-Corps significantly. At the time, we won the field, and then, did you guys call Brave?
No, well,
and they just came kind of, and
technically,
then,
yeah, when we saw that the carrier came out, it sort of got in the water that a carrier was around.
Yeah.
And one of our guys knew a Brave guy, and I forget who convoed who,
so,
but there was like, so, could we come kill that carrier?
So what we got in the end was your maybe 2025 Ishtar gang with whatever AFK support, plus a 70-man war fleet.
Like,
to...
zero AFK support, first of
oh,
all.
Well.
Because we were supposed to have an op with them at 1900, and they never showed up till 6 hours later.
Yeah.
And so. Brave only showed up for, what, 20, 30 minutes?
Yeah.
And then
it's
left.
Still, I mean, that size of fleet, though, the 70-man MOA fleet is enough to... I mean, we, at that time, could only field maybe 25 guys, even with cap support, and, you know, that's like nearly 100 guys you've got to fight, 30% of which are in your Ishtar fleet, which we found hard anyway.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the fight had really, at that point, already been over. We had traded engagements with your battleship fleet at least 3 times in the tower already.
Mm-hmm.
And then he brought the triage carrier in, at which point we had to take like a short break to figure out how we could possibly fight it. We were trying to like theorycraft, like, oh, well, if it goes triage on the edge of the shields and reps the modules, how can we deal with that?
Yeah.
Are we going to have to like switch ships to Nagas and hit it such a range that they can't even scram us? Like, we were going through all these different scenarios in our heads, figuring out how we can do this. And that's when the Brave option got mentioned.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, if we could just get the thing to triage, then Brave could come in and kill it. So we were like, okay, if we're going to do that, we'll stick with the Ishtars. And then we like tried to bait at varying degrees of hardness. First, it was like a soft bait, like, oh, maybe, you know, let's just keep doing our own thing as normal. And he didn't go for that. And they're like, okay, let's move really close to the tower edge and just sit near our drones. So we tried that for a little while. And that
worked
didn't
well
work.
For you, didn't it? I got my Alexiev card kill mail. I got it.
Oh, yeah, that was before the break. That was on the initial engage. You had post-gunned a newt, a web, and a point on me at one point. I was just stuck.
There was some from the pause gunners. There was a bit of incohesion, and then we finally got them sorted out to have that set up. So we went, right, I want him, because by that time it kind of come through that you'd started FCing properly in the pocket. So okay, dick move, but you know, you guys got three of my battleships on that occasion. So
it was quite fine. Unfortunately for you, our FCing core was kind of deep. So as soon as I went down,
absolutely. I mean, the intel we had told us that. So yeah, that was a morale thing more than anything, to be entirely honest.
Oh, it was a morale thing for us too, in a way, because even though I did die, like the next person up picked up FCing without missing a beat, and he wound up winning that fight. Whenever you have a new FC that wins a big engagement, that's always good. Like,
yeah,
people
absolutely
love that. And we won big. We picked off quite a few battleships, battlecruisers, and augurs off that. And then kept trading back and forth with that fleet for quite a while. Like, we would warp in at different ranges. You guys tried to warp in some smart bombers at a few points that we killed. And the reason we're going on so long about this is because I swear to God, this POS reinforced took 7 hours.
Long engagement. It was a long engagement.
Yeah. It was quite the battle. One that my guys that have participated are not going to forget anytime soon, and I'm sure you guys feel the same.
Absolutely.
And then the thing ended with a bit of a whimper. We thought you guys were going to throw down with like a really epic last stand.
Well, yeah, we were. Until again, I think your employer kind of killed that, unfortunately. Because as I think I said to you after, because we'd formed up our battleship fleet for one last hurrah. The night before, we'd made 45 to 50 pings all round the pause. To get war pins on you, because we had discussed shifting over to Dominix's, but again, the SP was the issue there, and the numbers were the issue there. I don't think 20% of the Alliance can fly hacks, unfortunately, but you know, we're getting there, we're training, we're trying, and we're succeeding, which is good. But I'll digress. So Yur-Ishtar's obviously came on. I came on in the battleships to kind of assess what was going on, and we had our scouts everywhere, and we had our spies seeing what was going on, and we noticed there was a form up of Provi Dreads, which had a target, but the inclination was that if we dropped our caps and dropped our supers, then they would repurpose, because I think there's only maybe one midpoint between them and us. And that was reinforced to us by the fact, I think, AFK had brought maybe 4 heavy dictors.
Nah, they didn't have any hicks that we know of.
Yeah, so I asked them if they had any. 2 devoters and 2 phobos, I think they had.
Oh, goddammit. As I asked them specifically, we could have baited the supers out, but they didn't have any that they told me about, and I was like, oh, well, that plan's out the water.
It was fun. We had a friend of a friend come through. I think you guys got the zealot, didn't you? The Angidin gate.
Yes, that
was a friend of a friend. So they actually we knew Darth Oreo had a devoter in the Teshkap, or one of the Teshkap pauses, and then from that kill mail we managed to glean that they had 2 Phoboses as well. So there was a discussion amongst the PvP team who were on at the time, who again I'd initially went to them and said, what do you think? And they said, well, you're the director, what do you think? And I went, well, who wants the Leroy? And so the grand call from everyone was Leroy. So we were actually going to give you guys the fight until we saw that, and then counted actually how many Provi Block there were in the pocket. And I think there was more people from Provi Block in the pocket than we had in our joint ops channel with all of our blues. So had it just been suddenly spaceships that we were fighting, we would have absolutely taken the fight. Conversely, had it just been AFK and their assorted Provi Block guys, we would have taken the fight, but
you probably could have taken it, to be honest.
Obviously you've got to kind of assess what you've got at the time. I mean, we spoke about that after, Alec.
I mean, hindsight's 50-50, or hindsight's 20-20 always.
Yeah, absolutely.
And real sight is like 50-50.
Man. So at the time, I just looked at it as if, do you know what, we're outnumbered 5-1. They've got dictors. I don't want to drop triage, and I don't want to drop the supers on it. Let's just let them have it. Let Noir do their thing. Big respect, like massive respect. And the guys were a little disappointed, but I think everyone understood, because at the end of the day, we don't have moons. We're trying to take some moons. Well, we did have a moon.
We don't anymore.
You guys take it back. No, we'll get it again. Like, listen, see, through this whole campaign, what I've said to the guys is that, you know, it's been a real blast fighting you guys, no matter if we've won or lost or whatever. I think the S-Corps is actually pretty okay for the size of Alliance and the relative youth of our Alliance. And no matter if you guys are, I don't know if you'll get kept on or not, but no matter what, we are going to come back and give these guys more fights and take back everything that you've knocked down, which has been great, and everyone's really up for that.
I wish you the best of luck. We're taking a holiday break for to go check out Thera. But come January, you know, who knows?
Yeah, absolutely, man. But it's great.
We didn't know
see.
About one more thing. While we're talking about the last thing that happened, we did wind up getting a fight out of you guys, even though it wasn't on the tower. Like immediately after the tower op was over, one of our European pilots, like our number one killer on the entire contract, caught a sigil on the outgate.
Bait tank, yeah.
Yeah, it was bait tanked, and he's like screaming on TeamSpeak, "Guys, you're not going to believe this. The sigil's, yeah. It's tanking me. It's tanking my legion."
It's got a 900 DPS passive tank on it.
He was could not get over himself. He was going crazy.
I thought he might be. So, our bait pilot called that he'd been engaged by the. He didn't tell us it was a legion at the time. I thought it was an Ishtar that got him. He said, "It's right on me. It's right on me." So, we had a small Tech 1 cruiser gate camp on the high sec side. We were actually waiting for a couple of war targets that came and helped you. And he called that the Legion was there and he had them tackled. And I was like, well, do you know what? They'll be in system anyway. We'll give it a shot. Why not? And then we were faced with a Legion and went, okay, well, let's see what we can do. And then the rest of the fleet warped onto us and I called to get out. We lost a few guys there, but
a few.
It was good fun.
Well, we knew the gate camp was on the other side and we were like, I bet if we shoot this, this sigil will come in. So we were all ready to go in armor stuff, including a pair of guardians. So as soon as it happened, you're like, oh, it's on. We all undocked. We went down there. I didn't even realize necessarily that it was VD at the time because that wasn't communicated to us. But like mid-warp, you're like, oh, it's the contract targets. That's cool. Got in there.
Thought we'd give you a last hurrah.
Yeah, it was cool. It was Battlecruisers versus Hacks. It was a lot of fun. And to cap things off, I activated a kill raid on a pod because, you know, my precious sex status.
Oh, don't and get me started on that.
It turned out to have 500 mil of implants in it. Hooray!
We'll not tell anyone about the standard combat pods then.
Everybody on comms is like, oh, Alec, because I activated the kill raid instead of just locking it and shooting it.
You were a bad man, sir. You're a bad man.
No, I'm a good man. I wouldn't expect anything less. I obeyed the law.
The law. But no, man, listen, we had an absolute blast having you guys down here. It's taught us an awful lot, and it's got people hungry to get into those kind of faster, small, more advanced ships. So it's been a really positive experience for VD. I can't speak for Eon, but certainly from VD, we've taken a lot from it. And we're looking forward to deploying it on your former employer, which will be awful fun. Sorry if my voice is going, by the way, it's 4:30 in the morning here.
Yeah, you and me both. Before we move on to the final section, the CSM corner, I wanted to talk about, like, you're struggling to counter the Ishtars. Because, I mean, you guys were in Amar battleships, which is one of the strongest possible counters.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So we were all wondering, like, what was stopping you guys from, say, you know, reshipping to Apox or something like that and putting pulses to play?
We discussed Apox and Dominix's, but it's a resources thing, Alec, in terms of individual pilot esque. I mean, we don't have enough to SRP that, and we don't have enough to buy everyone a hull for it. Guys kind of make their money their own way.
So you invested everything in the Abaddons and didn't have enough to switch.
We had that all in the pocket anyway, and it's difficult to switch out and get that stuff in. I mean, we brought in Dominix's and Apox for the last engagement today, but obviously that never happened, and I was a bit disappointed because I kind of wanted to use them and see if we could make a bigger account. But I mean, I don't think we were under any illusions as to what would happen. We wanted to give you guys a fight and get a bloody nose and see if we could make an account of ourselves, because we knew you were going to accomplish the contract anyway. But it's how we could disrupt you guys and give you guys a fight out of it. And you know, I'm massively proud of how VD did. Okay, I think we may have lost Esquire. I think that first day really helped us out.
Well, Nihilus Social Club really helped you out with the four Aeons.
Oh, yeah, but it's all relative. It's the meta.
A lot of people were saying about that, and I was like, well, you know what? They were the guys that lined it up, you know? And we made a pretty critical mistake, so I think it's... you know, it's totally fine to give you guys the credit for that. And from my perspective, massive respect to VD. You guys put us through our paces, and, you know, we couldn't make any mistakes against you. Every time we got lazy, we got penalized for it. So that's a... can't ask for much more than that in a an opponent, so definitely hat tip to you guys on that one. All right, Allie, CSM Corner, take us out.
All right, so we have just seen the release of a new patch. It is...
Rhea.
Yep, Rhea introducing Thera and new actual wormhole space. So there's new places to go. Apparently Thera's been a massive hotbed of fights, fun, and death and destruction. Saw one great post on the forums that was like, I'm really frustrated by the fact that I can't PvE in Thera because all of the stations are bubbled, and you would think that the NPCs would clear away the bubbles. CCP, can you do something? So that was some entertaining reading earlier today. But, so Thera's out, manual movement is out, although there's been a bug with, with setting hotkeys, so, I haven't tested it, I haven't heard anyone else who's tested it yet, but, that's probably the Rhea feature that I'm actually most excited about. When we last talked on the podcast, I think it was 4 weeks ago, I wasn't able to talk about it because like we just it was one it, it I knew that the thing about it was coming out soon, but it wasn't out yet, and really want to talk about it, but it's out. You can fly your ship with WASD. That's really awesome. Couple of the fixes and stuff, ability to invite people to corpse. There's the new weapons that you know, that give you the trade-offs. Alex, what's your thing you're most looking forward to out of this patch? Or have most enjoyed?
I haven't really gotten to experience much of it except for the redo of the ships. The physical base rendering sort of has given Eve a fresh look a bit. And I really liked how the ships are looking, except for my Shimu, which I think took a bit of a step back. It somehow looks duller than before, which is weird for something that's supposed to make everything bright and shinier.
Yeah, all of them are quite pretty.
Except the Shimu.
Yep.
So, that was cool. And also, something that I didn't really realize was coming, but the Eve client switching themes depending on what race ship you're in. That was really awesome when I realized that I could do that.
Yep.
So I'm one of those guys that gets bored with my color setup all the time. And, I never really went through the trouble of changing it. I just kind of, like, ignored that thing. But now that I can, like, have it switch up consistently, like, it's actually it's really weird and kind of stupid, I guess. But it's something I've actually legitimately enjoyed, and it has made the client itself a little more fun for me.
That's awesome.
As far as things I'm most looking forward to, Thera, obviously, can't wait to go check it out. As Rage says, yes, I did squeak like a pony when I found out I could switch the themes. Thera, looking forward to, and I'm looking forward to when the Confessor, the T3 Destroyer, gets a little more affordable. That's something I can definitely see myself flying a lot.
Yeah, the first couple have been coming out of the ovens at the customary high price, because of course this is Eve, and it's important for some people that they own the ship first.
Absolutely. It's never been an important thing for me, but I do look forward to playing with it.
Yep.
One question I have, Allie. These new sleeper drones have been released without a dev blog. Can you give us any insight on what they are and what they do?
No. I mean, it's... alongside the release of Thera, there's been a resurgence of some of the lore stuff that hadn't been going on for a little while for CCP, and so that, you know, new and strange things are happening is cool, but can't really comment on what.
Well, it's already released, so I think sort of by definition it's not under the NDA now.
What, that there are new drones? I mean, sure, there are new drones, but...
Well, specifically, they're AI drones, and allegedly they're attacking people. I was wondering, like, what the... Is there any rhyme or reason to it? Are they in high sec? Are they going to actively attack people if you fly around? Talk to our listeners about these things. Because CCP said they were going to put out a dev blog about it before the launch, and they just never did.
Okay, that I would have to check back up on.
Alright, we got Adorable Rage and Dimitri talking in the chat here, saying that the drones do not attack, but they scan you. And they do not carry any loot.
Yeah, they're just chilling at the moment. I saw some in the high sec, you know, a couple hours ago. They're just kind of floating around, not really doing anything.
Sort of a live and let live kind of thing?
I guess. Navies and Concord don't attack them, and I didn't see anybody attacking them myself, so...
Well, listeners out there, if you have any interesting interactions with these drones, if you find out any intel about them, you do something to them and they react a strange way, send it in. Let us know. We'd be happy for any information. It's one of the more mysterious aspects of this patch, and I think that's pretty cool. I haven't actually run into one yet, so... Apparently Rage has killed 15. Good for him. I have not even seen one. But I like the idea of it, and I hope they do attack people soon.
I did see something on Reddit. I don't know if it's true or not, because I've not seen it, but Sanchez Nation and the Shattered Wormholes?
Well,
I don't know.
I saw something on Reddit about it, and there was some pictures of them in a wormhole, so...
The only thing they said about it was in the patch notes, and it's literally just like two sentences. It's not really too informative.
Very interesting. I have set up the manual piloting shortcuts, but I have not actually tried them out yet.
Awesome. Yeah, last I heard they still weren't working, so good to hear.
Well, hopefully that gets fixed in time for the big race on the 17th.
Fortunately, things get fixed a lot more quickly these days.
Indeed they do. I think if anyone's got doubts about the new deployment cycle, they better be settled by now between the This Is Eve trailer, Phoebe, and now Rhea. I mean, come on. CCP is on a roll right now, and I think that's pretty hard to deny. I think the biggest challenge for the CSM and for CCP as an organization is to keep this energy up and keep this commitment up, because it's not like a thing where you can put out a whole bunch of stuff, then take a couple months break where you think about stuff and cool off and then gear up for the next expansion. This is like a rhythm that has to be kept up like a beating heart, and if it stops, that could be bad.
Now, Ali, I have a question. How and I don't know if you can answer this, but how has production been, have you asked about how production has been influenced by the departure of Grayscale?
Yeah, that one is moving on to our next topic. CCP Grayscale no longer with CCP. Confirmed, put a post up, but Mitani.com had a post up with CCP manifests confirmation, I believe. And that's, I think, all anyone knows about it. Certainly the CSM notices and asks about stuff like that, but that's not the kind of thing. CSM has to walk a kind of fine line here, because we are not, do not want to be, and in fact want to stay very far away from being CCP's HR department. You know, who's coming and going at CCP obviously is a matter of concern, but it's ultimately not, in a lot of ways, our business. How development is impacted is, and that can be something that you ask about. Hey, I know that Grayscale was working on this. What can we talk about where that's going now? You know, is it moving along at all? But it's, that's the kind of stuff that we can't then come back to the players with generally, because it's, you know, it's CCP's business, it's Grayscale's business, and it's really their business as to how they communicate about that. But yeah, you know, I enjoyed working with Grayscale. I have heard his reputation, which was at times not that great. But the times I've been with him in summits and chatted with him around that have been perfectly fine. Like I say, we the player base don't know very much about, you know, why he left, where he's going, anything like that. So, you know, yeah.
I think the jump range changes were a pretty cool parting gift for him. He said, like you said, a somewhat checkered reputation as a dev, but I feel like that's probably going to be the thing that in the end he's most remembered for. Probably at least for a while. Anyone that'll still remember him will probably remember that his last act was the Phoebe jump changes. That's a pretty good note to end on, I think.
Yeah, it's funny, because the Phoebe jump changes, which were very mixed reception, certainly very negative reception in the initial version. It's the industry changes before that he was very active on, and he got a lot of goodwill back on those threads and did a lot of great work posting there. And then before that, the thing that I knew about him from, you know, before I met him was, of course, the anomaly change, which I think may still be the thing for a lot of really, really old players.
Yeah. Forgot that was him.
Yep.
I'm sure a lot of people have not forgotten.
No, they have not.
All right, moving on. This is pretty interesting in that I don't think it's something CCP has ever done. Well, no, that's not true. They did it for the spewing loot stuff, but still. Allie, what's going on with industry teams?
They're going away. CCP made a post basically saying, you know, industry teams didn't work out the way that we wanted them to work out. We thought they were going to be cool. They didn't turn out to be cool. People aren't using them. So we're just taking them out. The rest of it still works. And I do, you know, the people who were using teams are a little bit like, hey, I think they're cool. But I don't think taking them away takes away the interesting parts of the industry rebalance. You know, you can certainly add back in things to try to get at the same design principles that the teams were getting at, and being able to look at something and say, nope, it didn't work, is a really valuable skill for someone like CCP.
Well, I gotta agree with that.
Well,
and
yeah.
I
think Adorable,
I mean,
Kings
are registered blah 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 resident industry person, so
yeah, no, I think I really think that Adorable says it best with, you know, props to CCP for having the balls to take something out that's not working. That's just, it's useless. I mean, it was an interesting concept. I didn't find myself using them. There was no real, I guess when I ran the numbers for the large scale production that I did, that it just wasn't... It wasn't really that necessary. I mean, it didn't make it that big of an impact. I think maybe if they made the teams offer more impact, it might have driven the need for it.
Alrighty, and finally, it's almost election season.
Indeed, the horse races are beginning. You can find it. It's, you know, still moved out of Jita Park Speaker's Corner and in CSM campaigns, and you can see a whole bunch of announcement threads going up. Of course, FanFest this year is in March, which means the CSM term will be ending in March, which is a little bit weird. I'm used to it rolling over in May, kind of following the school year. Yep, a whole bunch of threads up there, a whole bunch of good people in those threads. One person you will not find in those threads, and this is the first kind of big official announcement. I should have a blog up about this later. I'm not running again. This is my last year. It's been a good run. It's been an interesting run. But I'm going to park myself in the old Bitter Vets channel where I can trade barbs with CSM's past, and just go back to playing Eve, the dream of any CSM who's had a couple of terms.
Yeah, I was actually considering running myself, but I think I'll throw it out there that I'm not going to be running this year either. Right now, I'm having too much fun CEOing Noir right now, and I really feel like the corp is growing and in such a dynamic place that, like, I don't really like have to focus on it. I don't think the place would fall apart if I did CSM, but I really want to focus on it. And a lot of the changes that have been coming since CSM 7, you know, after I had that period of time to like recharge my batteries, I've really fallen back in love with the game, and I may run again at some point, but not going to be this year. I don't feel like it's the right time. And certainly there's a lot of other extremely capable people that are going to be running this year, so I don't feel like, you know, there's going to be some super need to draft me or anything like that. I think we're going to have a pretty cool CSM, just like we did with the past couple as well. And I'm cool just, you know, being an advocate, being an alum, helping out with campaigns and running debates. We're probably going to have, not debates exactly, we're probably going to do the roundtables again like we did last year. We had a lot of really positive feedback from you guys out there in the listening community about, you really felt like this was an interesting format that really got at the issues and helped you get to know the candidates in a way that was a little more off the cuff than an interview, perhaps, and a little more detailed on the issues that you cared about. So we will be doing them again once the official candidacy threads get put down, just like last year. Yeah, that's where it is. I will say that there is high likelihood someone in Noir will run again, and I'm sure Allie and I will throw our support behind them, because it seems to be a recipe for success for a lot of CSMs to have someone from Noir on them. It does seem to work out. So we'll be working on that. Got a couple of people that are interested, and we'll figure out who's running, who's not running, and we'll put that out as well.
We'll get them on the podcast. We'll grill them.
Oh yeah, no special treatment. No special treatment. Yeah, that's about it. One thing, Allie, is there any word from Lilu on when the timetable for the elections is going to be put out? When the official submissions are going to go? When the candidates are going to be approved? That kind of thing. It's going to have to be pretty soon after the Christmas holidays.
Yeah, I know we've started talking about it. I don't know, you know, or started asking about it. I don't know whether, I don't know when the official, if she said anything about when the official things are coming out, but, you know, it's something I can ask about.
Yeah, I would. It's, hasn't been as much of a problem with Lilu around, but
yeah,
in the CSM 7 to CSM 8 transition, there was big concern on the time crunch. That was kind of a big deal in terms of limiting our options to get things done and communicate with players and get the word out, that kind of thing. Don't want any repeat of that for any CSM.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, that's it. Thanks for tuning in. Go to declarationsofwar.com, participate in the poll for this show, leave a comment on it. Give us a donation. We really appreciate your support, guys. This is a listener-funded podcast. We accept ISK and bucks.
And don't forget, rate us on iTunes, 5 stars, please.
Rate us on iTunes. Please do not forget January 17th, New Eden Grand Prix. It's going to be huge. More details coming up about that quite soon, certainly before Christmas. And like I said, it's not something you're going to have to prep for. And aside from like mentally preparing yourself for some crazy piloting, because we're going to provide you with the ship and we're going to put you on the racetrack, and it's going to be the first to the finish. It'll be a very excellent time. Noir is recruiting. We got Noir Academy humming along quite well in sound. They're really hitting their stride down there. Noir itself just got a whole bunch of dudes. So we're really pumping in there, and we're really looking forward to a great 2015. And, yeah, so if you want to do any of that, go to cafenoir.ingame or go to the forums at noirmercs.com. Thaddeus, anything you want to plug?
Myself. VD, yeah. We rock. Come and play in low sec with us. You can fight
or
guys
come
like
and join Noir,
and
so you can
horribly.
Come and play with them.
You know, I think there's a pill that takes care of that.
Oh.
Nothing I can plug in, no. Slightly no. Homoerotic, no.
Slightly.
There might be something that you can, you know, there might be some sort of suppository, I don't know.
Ooh, babe.
Oh, I'm getting bombarded by Australian pokes in the studio chat that we've got going on right now. Noir's Australian time zone is quite hopping at the moment. Arcantix, Jesus Christ, dude. I was speaking at EVE Down Under, and we've had quite a few Australians graduate from Noir Academy recently. We've got a lot of West Coast United States players with Insomnia. It's really quite a hopping time to be. So if you're Australian or West Coast US and you find that your corp doesn't really have a lot going on in the times that you're on, you know, think about coming over our way, because we do have quite a few people there, and it's really becoming a very solid core. They're running their own ops. They ran their own capital ops on this contract, which is crazy. It's been a long, long time since Noir has had such a vibrant Australian time zone. It's really awesome to see. So this is like the time to participate. And with that, guys, we leave you. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Good hunting, listeners.
18 months of other projects for evil needy days. What little work was done for us adds nothing to our play. So the time you had was running out and our hearts were growing cold. When monocles were then released, you couldn't be more bold. Time has come for you to bring a true update for Eve, but it's also time to say goodbye to Huber's pride, you see. We love your game, we want to play, what should every player do? How could we get your sole attention? We didn't have a clue. Winter updates, let's wipe away our tears. Winter updates, cause the time is finally here. Cause the time is finally here. Giving us 4 brand new ships, the ARC team's job begins. Next we get new nebula, let the stars shine in. We take our ships, their old skins you let go. Give them new textures so their beauty will glow. Winter updates, let's wipe away our fears. Winter updates, the change we need is here. Winter updates, cause the time is finally here. Cause the time is finally here. Many players unsubscribed, this was the awful price. But now I'll see them all return, they can't escape their vice. You help them see why CCP has come from 6 below. You're making all the change we need, so the player base can't grow. Winter update, let's wipe away our tears. Winter update, the change we need is near. Winter update, cause the time is finally here. Cause the time is finally here. No easy task to nerf things down, but that's what supers need. With careful tweaking to and fro, they'll be balanced indeed. Destroyers, hybrid, starbase fuel, time dilation too. Must be working very hard, we know you'll see it through. Winter update, let's wipe away our fears. Winter update, the change we need is here. Winter update, cause the time is finally here. Cause the time is finally here. Now that I know what you will do, it's time to head for space. From station I will soon depart, expand my knowledge base. How will I do with all these changes? Will I die right away? Want Eve to go on, so I must get my friends to play. Get my friends to play. Let's wipe away our tears. Finally here comes the time.